Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. I'm Phil Carroll. It's Sunday the 4th of December. Time's flying this year. In a week where we've seen England knock Wales out from the group stages of the World Cup, including Germany and Belgium exit, civil unrest and street protests in China following Beijing's zero COVID policy, the government runs out of prison places and house prices falling for the next 2 years before any likely recovery, plus the French baguette has been given UNESCO cultural heritage standard. Ooh la la, what do you think of that, Kev?
Well, I'm shocked by the French baguette thing, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're saying that it's all down to the decline in these boulangeries in France. Has been a rapid closure since the pandemic, and they're concerned that the baguette has been, is at risk. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like pretty much a French institution to me. It's the sort of thing you do when you're in Paris or in France, isn't it? You go and get the baguette in the morning. Mm. So let's start with the football anyway. What about that some performance from Manchester, wasn't it?
Well, no comment on that, but England were very good. Decided to put Trent on finally at the very end as well. But yeah, it was a good performance. It wasn't amazing, you know. Wales didn't offer very much, let's be honest. They struggled really in all three games.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't England knocked them out. Iran knocked them out effectively, didn't they?
Yeah.
USA did pretty good. And it's been shocks galore, hasn't it?
I mean, the best one was
Japan team in the tournament so far.
Japan is causing some serious arguments. The contentious goal of FIFA hiding the footage, because they certainly weren't very forthcoming with any more angles. And VAR said the ball didn't actually go out of play for Japan's goal. So it's pretty contentious for me.
Yeah, contentious, but alas, it is what it is.
You need a bit of luck. I mean, there's a lot of memes going around, aren't they? Remember when they robbed us of a goal, didn't they? When it literally went, you could see it was about two or three foot over the goal line. I think that was it in the World Cup or Euros about probably 6 or 7 years or probably 8 years ago now. Time flies. But yeah, it's I think there's a lot of pundits out there who were coming out with a lot of schadenfreude last night. There was
it's happened more than once, hasn't it? Yeah. And I mean, I haven't actually even seen the incident, but the ball was to go out and then cross back and then scored. Is that basically what happened?
Yeah, basically the ball went out of play. The Japanese attacking player obviously crossed the ball in and then it connected and scored. So, I mean, it was pretty much, you could see from one angle it was offline. But as I say, VAR said it wasn't out. So what can you do if that decision has been made, or if the foot of the attacking player has blocked the camera angle, because they're saying that there's an angle from atop, there's a camera that sits above.
So yeah,
you kind of like a bird's eye view of it. And apparently that was obstructed. But I think FIFA have not been very forthcoming with the footage. And that's where it all kind of creates this contentious element. But moving on from that, I mean, China's been an interesting week in China with this unrest and protests on the streets in some of the major cities in Beijing and in Wuhan. What do you think about that? I think that they've announced now that they've actually opened up quite a lot of these lockdowns now in the major cities. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that it's a kind of almost like Tiananmen Square all over again? You know, we're starting to see some signs of protest and unrest.
It's quite remarkable, really, that there are protests in China, because, you know, the result of a protest is you're probably going to get put in a cell and you'll never come out. Is the reality of it. So yeah, it's people risking their lives now for saying, no, I don't want to be in this position. So I believe China's doing this for its own good. You know, China needs to cool its economy. If it doesn't, it's going to implode on itself, I think, because of the amount of debt and all the rest of it. So I think there's some serious ulterior motives flying about, you know. And, you know, the big story really economically, I still think, is America. And America's basically now said they're going to slow the rate of increase. Powell's come out and said that this week. The dollar has started to drop again, picked up when it came down to about 1.5, 1.6. It's now in the 1.4s, 1.04 point something. So the dollar needs to depreciate. And if the dollar depreciates, that helps America and probably helps the rest of the world as well, because everybody's buying the things, whether it be oil, gas, whatever, you know, in dollars,
yeah,
whether sure. it's corn, orange juice, whatever. The world values these things in dollars. So if the dollar is very highly valued, then this is going to cause pain to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live in a third world country, and the pain here at the minute for normal Egyptians earning an average salary is horrendous.
The pound dollar's recovered. I mean, what is it? It was 1.225 was last time I looked, which has been a very good recovery from the almost parity lows we saw during when the announcement of the mini budget, as it was called. But I think that, as you say, that when you look at the performance as well of the S&P and the NASDAQ and the Dow in the last week, it's been remarkable, hasn't it? It's done really well. It's been almost at its all-time highs. And also the FTSE peaked to about 7,600, far from its all-time highs. When are we going to see the small caps, nano caps start to kind of recover? I mean, we've seen a bit of recovery, but we're still in this bear market for sure.
Yeah, it's coming. I think it's coming. And most of them are in the resource sector, really, when you think about it. Most of the nano-type stocks are resource. A huge percentage of AIM is resource stocks. So it's coming. It's coming. You know, copper has come back a bit as well, as in increased...
Gold's been good because a lot of investors looked to that for a safer haven as copper prices dropped back a bit, as you say. But gold had a good resurgence, didn't it, in the last week or two?
Yeah, well, gold's also a dollar story. I mean, at the end of the day, we have dollar weakness, we'll have gold strength. I mean, it's without question that's an inversion that is going to happen and has happened naturally many, many times. So as the dollar weakens, I expect gold to value itself up. But actually, in the rest of the world, that's not going to change the price of gold in the currency that people buy it at. You know, it's only for the US dollar version. So, yeah, interesting things. From a small cap point of view, the market seemed a bit dead this weekend, where there wasn't much happening. I suppose there was a few standouts, but we can talk about those later, yeah?
So another article that piqued my interest this week, Kev, was that batteries thrown in household rubbish bins cause about 700 fires every year in dust carts and waste processing centres, local authorities have said, with lithium-ion batteries exploding if damaged or crushed. So we have our guest this week who may be able to shed some light on or commentary to this article. Welcome, Robin Rundle, Executive Chairman of Technology Minerals.
Good morning, Phil. Good morning, Kevin. How are you both?
Looking very good in your high-vis jacket there, Robin. It's good.
Yes, thank you very much.
On site?
Yeah, on site at Tipton today, so at the end of the week of the first cut. So, yep. All properly PPE'd up, as you can imagine.
It looks as cold as it was when we were there. It was bolting.
Yep, hasn't warmed up any.
It's probably got colder, actually, since you... So what are your thoughts on that article? I mean, just how big a problem are these batteries in waste?
It's a significant problem. And, you know, in our previous discussions, I've actually described the disposal of these lithium-ion batteries as a tsunami that's here and not coming. And in any of the sort of government discussions that we've had as well, we've really rammed that point home that you know, this isn't a future tense. This is a problem. There were last month alone, to your point, you know, there were over 200 landfill fires that were specifically accredited to lithium-ion batteries that had an issue. And so, with our national collection system that we've previously described, with our capability, once it's licensed from the Environmental Agency, we really do offer a solution to a lot of these problems. So, it is a big problem. And we've seen, you know, other events around the world as well. It isn't just restricted to the UK because these batteries are international commodities. So, yeah, it's a problem. And I think there is a serious education program required for consumers to know, you know, where to place these batteries. And, you only have to look at the millions a day of these e-vaping batteries is one classic example. And there currently isn't a solution other than putting them into landfill. We really are building a huge problem for ourselves here.
I think one of the things that struck me about, obviously, the site visit we did to the Libat site was seeing the machine, the shredder, and the fact that live batteries or defective batteries could actually be put through the machine, because obviously it has them in it like an inert state. So it would contain any kind of runaway event during that process. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that and the machine, etc., associated with the fact that, because I guess that's almost like a USP is or an IP, is that you've got this technology that prevents this from happening?
Yes, we have, is the short answer. And yes, our plant is designed to contain both fire and explosion, because the moment you pierce the batteries in any way, then because they've got their own supply of oxygen in them, only small pockets, but they've got the three sides of the fire triangle already built into the batteries. So, you know, our job is to make sure that we can shred them safely and to also stop explosion. And to do this, our other USP here is that we have a dry front end, so we're not adding any moisture to the front end. So where there are any of these liquids called electrolyte inside any of these batteries, we can extract that electrolyte as well and filter it to a point of being able to be reused again, part of the circular process that we have. But again, more importantly, we can put any combination of these five chemistries. So this could be vaping, it could be e-bike, it could be automotive, it could be forklift trucks, trains, any sort of size and scale of these batteries that can actually go through this process. And that's where our USP is, that we're able to contain that fire, that explosion, and then safely process the batteries to be able to recycle them. And this has been our mantra from day one. And the fact that we've got this dry front end and not soaking them in a saline solution, as one or two others are trying, you know, gives us a very strong USP.
Yeah, that was one of the things that occurred to me while I was there as well, is that you have a USP, but you actually have a machine that you're going to be able to sell to others as well, because you have the patent or whatever and the IP on that particular product. So this is something that could, from a worldwide perspective, be absolutely huge. No, I mean, you cannot run them all.
No, absolutely. And you're quite right. And as we've previously said, that, you know, we have a twin track strategy. One is to be the collector and processor of lithium ion here in the UK, and we've evidenced that we've got that collection. We've got the safety boxes for transfer, which you also saw while you're at the plant as well. And we've got the process capability as well, as soon as we're able to switch it on. And we've got off-takers as well. But the second part of that is that we've got ongoing discussions with gigafactories. We've got ongoing discussions with car automotive companies and battery manufacturers, commonly called gigafactories, but there are other OEM battery manufacturers as well. And we've got ongoing discussions with them because our plant doesn't, because it doesn't add moisture, it doesn't need any temperature beyond 85 degrees, you know, and the noisiest part of it are fans. So, you know, from sitting in line in a factory for health and safety reasons for the operators, you know, we can sit beautifully in any factory. And because we're modular, you know, as their efficiencies, you know, they may have two or three of our plant initially in their first year of operation if they buy the plant, but also arguably, you know, as they become more efficient with their production, they can then go back on the number of modules, redeploy those perhaps to other areas, gain back space, gain back energy and efficiencies that way. So it's cost effective. You know, we're not asking people to spend 200 million and then have it, you know, non-commercially viable after 2 years. That's completely the other end of the scale to us. You know, we're sitting at that sort of 10 million per plant price tag effectively. And, you know, it's far more affordable and justifiable on a modular basis.
One of the things that struck me about it is the fact that you've got a number of, you know, recycling byproducts. You've got, obviously, you've got the plastic, which can be pulled away. You've got the paper element. So you've got this environmental friendly, but you've also got the ferrous and also the black mass, which is the big one that comes out. So from a kind of revenue perspective, it's possible that a manufacturer may want one of these machines so they can actually take control of the black mass that's coming out and put it back into the supply chain.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, depending on where in the world, because we're talking to global companies here, certain regions around the world have capability to separate the black mass. Whether that separation, the hydromet process, as it's referred to, whether that's strong enough at this stage to make the materials what we call precursor, i.e. immediately ready to a state of readiness to go back into a battery, depends on which process and hydromet process they're using. And there could be an additional stage after that to really cleanse the material to go back into battery reuse. I mean, they're reusable in other sectors, but ideally we'd like them to be ready for a battery reuse. And there are people that we're talking to and potentially working with in the future, which will be future announcements as they come off, to bring that capability here to the UK. And it's very important because we want to keep these minerals here in the UK so that we don't have to buy them as a country. We don't have to buy them from abroad, because that's going to make us less commercially viable for really important sectors like the automotive sector here in the UK that, you know, employs so many people and generates so many taxes that we just can't afford to not keep this automotive revenue stream for the country and employment stream alive. And so, you know, we're trying to keep as much raw material here in the UK as we can. And as a company, we're working hard on joint ventures to look at doing exactly that.
Robin, the good news this week, obviously we visited the site in Tipton where you're at now, which is the lead acid batteries. You know, for the layman, a monstrous machine that obviously rips batteries up and puts them into different baskets and takes the lead out and takes the metal out and takes this out and takes that out. And
yeah,
effectively you have all these other streams of income then. So tell us what's happened this week. I mean, it's still not what we would hope for, but at the same time, this is going to start for the first time Teck Minerals being income generative.
Yep.
And therefore hopefully starting to cover a good portion of your overheads of the business, if not all of them, within a few months.
So yes, you when you visited the site, our narrative before has been that we're able to do hand sawing with humans, obviously involved in that process that you saw, but we're doing it in the same building right next door to a piece of plant and machinery that should take the human element completely out of it, and the health and safety, better health and safety from having an automated plant. So the maths for us are very simple. You know, we've started a manual process to get the teams up and running at around 10 tons a day. We expect to very quickly before Christmas now, and probably starting actually from the new year, we will have ramped that up, we believe, to around 13 to 15 tons per day of manual processing. To put it in perspective, the plant itself can do 16 tons an hour. So what we've got teams of employees doing in a day, the plant can actually do in 1 hour. So I think that's a good indicator as to the scale of where the business and the revenue streams for us we'll go to as soon as we can switch that plant on. We're told by the Environmental Agency that we're pretty imminent now on having license variation to go from manual cutting to the automated plant, that we're getting pretty close to the top of the queue to be having human intervention rather than computer intervention. And that would indicate that we should be reasonably imminent now on having news. And by that, I mean fully operational, hopefully by Q1 next year.
So what sort of revenues can you hope for with those volumes that you talked about?
When we sell the materials, it's roughly around 60% of LME, to give you an indication. And of course, LME varies each day, of course. So we buy inbound material as a percentage of LME on the day, and we sell as a percentage of LME on the way out. And it can vary slightly depending on levels of sulfur in the lead, because we have to do an assay of each of the batches that we're selling. And it can also depend a little bit on moisture as well. So they're normally pretty consistent because, you know, there's certain types of batteries that we're hand sawing. We're not hand sawing everything. So at the moment, we're not hand sawing automotive because they, when you cut those apart, it tends to just be a sludge or a slurry in the bottom of them. Whereas the types of batteries that we are hand sawing have got high value lead plate, high value lead terminals as well, which are 99.9% lead. And high quality lead with the terminals. And then, of course, we have the acids and as you've said, the plastics as well. So that's really where we're at. So our 16, you can do the math, the 16 tons a day, 60% of LME as a guide, will give you some indication as to where the revenue streams are coming from. Plastics are around £20 a ton, for example. And, you know, each battery that we put through, you know, around 16% of the batteries are going to be the acid and the plastics and the card separators, effectively. Again, it gives you some ideas of numbers on that. And of course, it's not going to be the same revenue stream as when we switch the plant on. As I've just said, we can only do in a day what we would do in an hour with the automated systems. But as you alluded to a moment ago, you know, it's generating cash. It's getting our systems running. It's giving our people real-time work rather than, you know, running through a dry run, which you only do so many times in the year that we've been waiting. And yeah, you know, it's now about scaling up the manual process. If we were told that there was any form of delay, then we can put more handsaws in and we can up the volume to give us increased volume. So at the moment, you will have seen that we had two saws working and, to do the volumes. But again, it doesn't stop us putting another shift of team on to put another two saws in to double that volume if that's what we choose to do. At the moment, we're testing obviously our business model all the way through with this in readiness for switching the plant on, because we do believe that these licenses should be imminent.
And I guess that's the next big event, isn't it? Is the EA approval and actually switching the machines on and having all the automated processes going on there.
Yeah, very much so, you know, and obviously we informed the environmental agency before we commenced that what we were doing this week with our 30 tons, and they sent a representative down and who was very impressed with what we were doing. And that's all good, because that gives them a chance as well to see us as operators. You know, we've got our operator's license. But of course, it was all in theoretical on paper, and the processes need to be robust. The people need to be trained and they need to be qualified, of course. But of course, you know, what it has done is said, look, you know, these human beings actually have then delivered against these processes. And that's another important part of it, to make sure that our health and safety, harm to humans, harm to environment is all properly protected.
Well, we wish you all the best, and we look forward to having you on again soon, Robin, and giving us an update on progress.
Great. I look forward to doing that. And perhaps have my jacket off at that point.
Thanks a lot, Robin.
All the best. Thank you.
So that's one company that seems to be going places, doesn't it? Tech Minerals, they've done well to actually get the manual process in place and get that first 19 tons done. So I think just all it needs now is the EA approval, and they're off to the races.
Yeah, I think they've got many facets where they're going to make money, I think, over the longer term. I think
it's a sausage machine, isn't it, as Robin alludes to.
That's the one thing with Tech Minerals that attracts me, is you've got the lead acid batteries, obviously the recycling of them. It's really just cash generative machine. You pay for the batteries, and on the other way out, you get paid for the lead. And I think from all scenarios when we were there, we were discussing there's a 20 to 28% margin on that, depending on the type of lead that you get and different other things. So that's just a money-making machine. You put money in, you get more money out just from a simple process. And then you've got the lithium-ion batteries, which is not such a simple process. And not only that, people are going to pay you to take those batteries. There's going to be gate fees on that. So you're going to have gate fees coming from that. And then you're going to sell the black mass as well, and all the other parts that you mentioned, paper, plastic, whatever, ferrous, etc. So those are the recycling things. Then you've got the IP on the machine for the lithium-ion batteries. So you've got the IP to then effectively distribute and sell that machine at quite a significant markup, obviously. So you've got then a retail business effectively to sell that to gigafactories. And then on top of that, you've then got the halo boxes, which effectively are going to be required to transport the lithium-ion batteries in the future from all sorts of organizations that are going to be using lithium-ion batteries. And that in itself, I think, is going to be a business that could well be worth several hundred million pounds easily once it gets ramped up. You know, they've got the IP and the technology for all of those different sectors. The downside, and why the share price has floundered, and it has floundered, is because of the just delay in revenue. They expected revenue from the lead acid battery 6 months ago or longer, which would have obviously been a game changer, would have made much more of a difference to them. So that's the recycling side of things. And then on top of that, you've got the mining. You know, they've gone into the green metals, or the metals of EV cars, whether that be copper, cobalt, lithium. And they've got different projects in different parts of the world, all with intrinsic value. The one that I think has the most value is probably the one in America that has cobalt, because they've seen, the Americans have now seen that as a crucial infrastructure element, I think, for the US. So yeah, I think it's got so many categories in it that it's almost hard to think that it can fail. Yeah. And secondly, it's got so much opportunity to produce revenue from the different streams that, yeah, I think it's going to be a big success.
For sure. Good. Let's have a look at some of the other week's movers. So we've had, these are the ones that are sort of standout that the AIM highlights. We've got Invinity Energy Systems. They secured a reseller agreement with a Taiwan-based Everdura technology company, which you'll see Everdura purchase vanadium flow batteries from Invinity. An initial 15 megawatt hour vanadium battery has been agreed, and there is scope for an additional 255 megawatt hours. Invinity has also recently inked a deal through a third party for a 2.2 megawatt hour sale, their biggest deal at the time, but dwarfed by this week's deal. So that's had a good week. I think the market cap's around 40.5 million, share prices up to 32.5, tickers IES. We've also had Power Metal Resources. They we've interviewed Paul, and he's very enthusiastic about this company, of course. They stepped up their exposure to lithium with the acquisition of the North Wind Lithium Project in Canada, and it covers some 5,788.5 hectares over a 16-kilometer long trend of highly anomalous lithium in lake sediment results. And the acquisition further bolsters Power Metal's highly prospective mineral assets in favorable jurisdictions. So that, what do you think on Power Metals? It seems to be static around the 1.5p share price, despite the fact that they've had some pretty good news in the past sort of couple of months.
I'd have to compare Power Metal Resources not quite the same, but similar scenario to Cloudbreak Discoveries, in the fact that they've got a huge number of projects all over the place with a variety of different metals. It's hard to put valuations on them all.
Yeah.
But both of them seem to be significantly undervalued for what they have. Materially undervalued.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether because it's just a bit more confusing for investors to understand or what, but I mean, Power Metals should have a couple of rollouts. You know, they were talking about a couple of IPOs coming out of them, which could basically increase that valuation significantly, I think. So yeah, it's one to keep an eye on, I think. And you're right, it stuck, but it was stuck at under a penny, I think, for a long time there as well. So,
yeah.
And then it moved up and then it's sticking where it is. But
there was another one, the Cora Gold. They released the maiden resource and definitive feasibility study, the DFS, for their flagship Sanakoro gold project in Mali. And the resource is thought to hold 10 million tons of total ore at a grade of around 1.3 grams per ton of gold and total recovered gold of 380,000 ounces. And they've got a market cap of 12.3 million. So I think there's some movement there. I think the mine life is thought to be around 6.8 years with around 56,000 ounces per annum average production. So it looks like a quite undervalued gold explorer there.
Yeah, while you're on the theme of gold, it caught my eye this week about GCAT as well, that they managed to get a £10.5 million non-dilutive loan agreement, I think, to start progressing the situation as well. So, yeah, they look interesting and have been battered down, obviously. They've had a few raises as well, I think, or at least one. Don't quote me on that because I don't know the full details. But, yeah, it looks starting to look an interesting prospect. If someone's willing to lend them $10.5 million, then I suggest that there must be something in the ground, otherwise...
Yeah.
It's not happening. They're already producing gold, obviously, on a monthly
basis. Yeah, there's a lot of gold pours coming out there, and I'm surprised they haven't. Because when they came to market, they did really well, didn't they? Moved up from like the 0.7 right up to, I think, like the late ones, and then they've kept around that sub 1p mark for a long time now. I've never really understood why they can't get out the traps, as you say. So anyway, should we talk about the Ben webinar that we hosted this week? What are your thoughts on it? I mean, you know, obviously it seemed to be pretty well received. And they had the RNS late Friday, which obviously announced some of the figures, the tonnage. Do you want to talk through the RNS and the webinar?
Yeah, I thought the webinar was very good, especially as I was physically dying at the time that I was doing it. But yeah, I thought it was good. We got a lot of answers from Adam. It was definitely good to hear from the horse's mouth in MBU. Hopefully that means people have put that one to bed, that MBU are in it for the long run. They want to make a good return on this money. And yeah, as far as they're concerned, it's nowhere near its full value. Regarding the tonnage, I mean, I think the RNS came out on Friday, didn't it?
It was 43,736 clean tons.
Yeah, so I mean, basically, that's the most they've done in a month, which is great. They're now on the new license. You know, that's obviously going to continue in December. As soon as they get the benches sorted out, then they're going to be requesting the second high wall minor. Yeah, so January, February, you know, maybe probably sometime in February, you're going to be then taking third shift then on the second hole high wall minor. The first shift is what I mean, but that means three shifts in total.
Yeah.
And then soon after, maybe a week or two after, you're going to have two shifts. So then you're going to have four shifts. You're going to have probably 120 to 140 tons of mined coal going through the wash plant, and that's going to produce anything from I think 60 to 75,000 tons of clean coal, and maybe a bit more, who knows. If the take up is higher, you know, it's only going to take to move from sort of 52% to say 60%. And 8% of 120,000 tons of coal is a lot. It's another 10,000 tons of coal a month. And then they've got 10,000 tons of coal coming from underground as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's two take-home things from the RNS, from that monthly production update RNS. The first one, obviously, being that it's the highest monthly production to date. So that as the wash plant's been on, it's in steady state. Obviously, the other thing is the new seam. It's the newly permitted seam that the high wall miner has been moved to, as obviously is giving out a better yield. So that's the first thing. They've moved it to the right place, and also the fact that if you look at the company's prospectus or the admission document. I think on page 24, it refers to the fact that they were going to reach peak annual production at 440,000 tons in 2025, which obviously equates to 37,000 tons per month. So effectively, they have hit this target 3 years sooner than they intended to, which is formidable. It's remarkable, really, for me.
Yeah, it sounds great, but we had big expectations and now we're sort of calming them down and saying, okay, the reality is this. The reality is now we've achieved what we said we were going to achieve 3 years from now.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And secondly, probably going to not double that, but not far off double that at some point in the not too distant future. And we have a company that's valued just over £100 million. And it doesn't make sense really now, valuation.
One thing that made me laugh was I read some comment on one of the boards that, you know, obviously that Adam and Mohammed were invited to the Senate, that they'd actually, that somebody had photoshopped a picture of Adam into the actual Senate photograph of him stood there with a couple of the senators. And it's like, but he made it clear that Mohammed would, as the largest shoulder via MBU, would be obviously invited there too. So I just don't know what goes through people's minds. Why would you invent some conspiracy theories that it's been photoshopped?
I don't know. It was me who asked Adam to make sure he sent us photos of it so we could share it with people.
So you're to blame for the photoshopping, are you?
So he's basically, you reckon I'm capable of photoshopping?
No, not at all.
Exactly that. I mean, it's not physically possible for me to do that. Not that anybody would be able to guess that I'd done it anyway. No, it's just some people have got nothing better to do with their lives. Such is life. No, there's a picture there of Mohammed, Adam, and the lady from MBU who came over as the PA with Mohammed. And on the other side, you've got Mr. Under Armour, who actually I think is the main man in the Senate. Isn't he? He's dressed in his tracksuit.
Yeah, you know, I thought he was going to get the badge in for a second with his stone eye. Look, get the stonies out.
Yeah, so there you go.
Anything that piqued interest or you thought was, I mean, one thing that I can't believe is people are still trading parsley meal, the parsley box, which is the sort of effectively almost like the Meals on Wheels for pensioners. They announced that effectively that they would cease trading on the stock market. So I don't know what people still trade in that one with the thought any minute, a bit like May, that it could go under any minute.
Could go under any minute, could make them 50% any minute. It's just gambling. Yeah. And when I was speaking with Colin Bird, because there was a bit of a hoorah over Extract this week, because somebody decided to suggest certain things on the bulletin boards about Extract and their Bush Ranger project. Colin sent me this song. Yeah, good old Kenny Rogers. And he sent me this. It's called The Gambler.
Said if you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough to count when the dealing's done.
So this spoke to me. You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. You got to know when to walk away. And you got to know when to run. But don't count your money while it's still on the table. Count it when you've cashed it in. And the final thing was, wait until the deal is done, right? Because there are many, 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 many companies that we cover that the deal is not done and it's not over. And some of them, yeah, they're not going to succeed. That's basically the part of the market that we work in. You know, we are not in FTSE 100 territory here. We are in micro cap, small cap.
I mean, yeah, you're in casino company territory.
Yeah, and if it works, you are going to get handsomely rewarded. And if it doesn't work, yeah, you could lose the whole lot.
It's all about risk reward. If you want low interest or safe investments, open up a post office savings account or something like that. You know, that's the reality of it. Or bonds, or government bonds, or even something like premium bonds, because they're going to give you a lower rate of return, but a safer rate of return. And then you've now got in banks now coming out. Have you seen that they've actually started passing on savings? So I think 1.2% was the best you could get in terms of savings interest. Now, there are a couple of banks who've just, they're going to give 4%, which is remarkable, really, considering that, you know, we are at that anyway. We're not even at that, are we? I think we're, what are we around now, 3.75?
Yeah, but it's going up, and we know, sure, it's going up. So yeah, they're basically just stepping in and saying, okay, we can take a few months where we will get more, yeah, than that. Yeah. And interbank rate, they're probably getting more than 4%. So they're still making money on it and shoring up their own finances, which isn't such a bad idea. You know, but the whole point was that we're in this part of the market and it's very easy to blame every single situation around you, okay? Whether that be the CEO, you know, even us as podcasters, you know, and PR people, the guy on the bulletin board who everybody trusted and he said this and he said that and he said the other. You know, the reality is we make our own decisions. Yeah, some of us make them wisely, some of us don't make them wisely. Some pay off, some don't pay off. But that is ultimately the game we're playing. So let's play it and play it well and play it as nicely as we can. And I think that's what stuck out to me this week. And it was Colin Bird who sent me that song. He said it just reminded him like that. This is what it is all about, because it is, you know, that this is the market we're in. You only need, this is your saying, you only need one 10 bagger a year or one 5 or 10 bagger a year. And you're going to succeed that year. It's without doubt, you know, all your other money is not going to disappear. But the problem we've had in the last year, especially, well, 2022, we thought 2021 wasn't that great, but 2022, it's been a death by a thousand cuts, hasn't it? It hasn't been a
There's been some really good trading opportunities of the last 2-3 months that have been glaringly obvious. And I'm amazed if people haven't, you know, if good investors or good traders haven't made some coin on it, because stuff's been so oversold that it has to have been a recovery play or a bounce play, as I refer to them. So there has been money to be made for sure. And you've got to be nimble. You've got to be agile. You've got to be in and out. You've got to act on those ones that are staring you in the face. So
yeah, well, that was the other thing that really did occur to me to this week as well, when I was basically in a hotel room in London dying of the flu rather than doing what I was supposed to be doing, was just the different type of investors that we have. You know, there are traders and there are like real traders, as in hourly traders. They'll trade for 3-5%, doesn't matter what it is, I've made a profit, thank you very much. Then you've got your in and out guys that are trading, but maybe over a few days they see this opportunity, this could go 10, 20, 30, 40, 50%, and if it's more, brilliant. So you've got those type of people. You've then got your technical analysis traders who are basically going in there, and unless all the stars line up on their graph, they're not going to buy. And if they do, then they're going to go through the process. And as soon as it hits their box, they're out again, and that's the trading. And then you've got, I don't want to say it, but it was me for sure, Joe Public, who's basically looking at the fundamentals of a company and saying, the fundamentals of this look right, and I feel right about it, and I want to buy it. So I buy it, and I hold it. And if there's no momentum in the stock, then you could just be sitting there twiddling your thumbs for a long, long time. And many of us are in that boat, and many of us are in that boat because maybe we bought at the wrong time, or we bought, you know, too much, and we were overexposed in that particular stock. So all of these different things counter to the positions that we're in. And the worst thing that I think we can do is try and chase ourselves, because then end up losing even more money if you really do chase yourself. So sometimes you have to take a deep breath, you have to pause, you have to analyze the stocks you're in, and say, I made the decision to go into these stocks for this reason. And does that reason still apply? Is it still right? And if it is, then you got to hold your nerve. You know, you got to know when to hold them. A good example, me personally, I hold, and I openly say, I hold Teck Minerals. And I hold Teck Minerals at a higher level than it currently is. A lot higher, because it's gone down significantly. Why am I holding it? Because I have to hold my nerve. I have to say, no, this company has a lot of potential. And unfortunately, if you've been holding your stocks, you must be in that position with nearly every stock you have, because the market's an all-time low in terms of the last few years. So, yeah, that was going through my head, obviously. Maybe it was just because I was feeling so crap that I just thought, okay, I have to analyze what's been going on here. And had some successes, but certainly a lot more failure than success in the last year.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we should wrap things up. And good luck, England, for this evening. Because even though it's Senegal, I think there's no easy game, as it's been we've witnessed. Yeah, you know, we've seen Germany exit, we've seen Belgium exit, we've seen Spain actually, you know, going through, but obviously not as top of the group. Everyone said they'd be group winners. Japan obviously took that mantle. So yeah, good luck England, and we'll talk about.
Well, if you had your choice out of the last 16 teams, I mean, they're not all
decided. Spain looked out going through second for sure.
But what I'm saying to you is, who would you choose if you were an England manager to play in the last 16, if you had a choice of teams?
I don't know. I mean, it's too hard to call, isn't it? There's no easy teams. I think, you know, to go in with the arrogance of we're going to beat Senegal easily, you know, what are they ranked in the world compared to, you know, there's no easy game. So I don't know. We're going to face, if we beat Senegal, we'll end up facing France in the quarters. That's not going to be an easy game. They're current world champions and they've played some good football. So I don't know. Yeah. I really don't. I think you just take each game as it is. Who knows?
Yeah, no,
who knows? Poland might beat France and we end up facing Poland in the quarters. You don't know.
Yeah. No, I was going to say the team that I would choose right now if I had a choice to play someone is Poland.
Yeah.
And they looked poor. Yeah. I don't know how they actually managed to scrape through, but there you go.
Yeah. Speak soon. Have a good weekend, Mike.
Yeah, and you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.